From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university with your host, Steve Sherman.
So-called student unrest on university campuses is not unique to the 1960s or to this decade or even to this century. Since inception of the first form of higher education, wherever students gather, we find a degree of unrest, of dissatisfaction with the established order. In France this summer, we had an example of how student unrest can lead to the near collapse of a political regime. Indeed, history records that student revolts have led to the violent overthrow of entire governments, to armed combat, to the deaths of hundreds. What then of unrest with this generation of college students in the United States? How should we view this unrest? What action, if any, should be taken to ameliorate or end it? And looking close at home, what is the temperament of students today on the campus of our state university, the University of Alaska? With us to comment on this subject is Dr. Lewis Haynes, Dean of Students at the University of Alaska. Dr. Haynes, how would you appraise student temperament or attitudes on your campus?
Well, let me first compare this with what I see the issues to be throughout the lower 48, and I get this from reading, as many of you do, plus talking to my colleagues. It would seem to be there are four general areas that lead to this feeling of unrest. One, of course, concerns political issues, the Vietnam War, draft, recruiting, etc. The next issue is this concept of due process, rights of students in terms of disciplinary action taken by the school. Three, involvement in the actual decision-making of the university. And four, which is becoming more and more an increasing concern, is relevance of the curriculum. Now, I'd like to reflect... talk to each one of these in terms of our particular institution, University of Alaska. With reference to political problems, I don't see as much of a problem here in as much as most of our students have not had the type of exposure that students down below have had who have lived in the large cities where these issues are taking place. It is therefore my feeling that, with the exception of a minority of students, there will be a legitimate concern in the political campaigns, the election, but none of the intense concern generated by those students living immediately within a locale where these problems are taking place. Now, with regard to due process and a concern for being represented, I feel that our university has made considerable progress in that our students have always had the opportunity to appear in person, to have their opportunities for discussing the problem with witnesses. They've had the opportunity for appeal. The general action has always been first with student groups and then appropriate appeal to student faculty boards. I therefore feel that we have been able to follow this concept of due process. Three, involvement in the decision-making of the university. You may be aware that the university assembly was initiated last year, in which we have a minimum of three students now who are going to be involved in this group, which are to make the important decisions for the university. We also have the principle of committee systems, in which most of the policy-making committees are both faculty and students. Relevance of the curriculum. This is a concern, and I think all of us here at the university are aware of this and are currently attempting, and we await the arrival of our new vice president, to somehow relate our curriculum more to the problems that are going on in the world today.
Briefly, Doctor, how would you epitomize the university's philosophy towards student orientation and guidance?
Very briefly, the direction has moved towards primarily an academic one. Our program this year has been geared in this direction, and we are emphasizing this completely, providing the faculty an opportunity to orient the students to an intellectual and academic environment.
Thank you, Dr. Haynes. Our guest today has been Dr. Lewis Haynes, Dean of Students at the University of Alaska. I'm Steve Sherman.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university with your host, Steve Sherman.
3 years ago, officials of the Kennecott Copper Corporation committed themselves to hiring a small group of Alaskan natives, men totally unskilled for the jobs they were destined to fill, jobs as technicians in the mineral industry. Unusual? Perhaps. But the Kennecott officials had confidence in their commitment. Before joining the company, the native men were to attend a training course offered by the University of Alaska in cooperation with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Since then, three groups of men have been graduated from the course. Kennecott and other firms engaged in mineral and petroleum exploration are highly enthusiastic about the course graduates. Here to explain the program to us is Dr. Donald Cook, head of the Department of Mineral Engineering at the University of Alaska. Dr. Cook, what prompted the start of this course 3 years ago?
Well, I believe that most ideas either change automatically or are forced to be changed somewhere in their development, and this program was no exception. My original thought in this program was if we could bring one or two individuals into the university from the outlying villages for a 9 months training program in the mineral industries, we could send these students back to their villages, and they could act as a nucleus to stimulate the other villagers into prospecting in their particular areas. This concept was presented to the Bureau of Indian Affairs in the form of a proposal. They were interested, but could not finance the program unless there was some guarantee of employment upon its completion. Fortunately, Kennecott Copper Corporation saw definite advantages in having employment of the people within their particular area they were working. Consequently, they guaranteed employment of all 15 students for the first year. This, in effect, got the program underway.
Could you tell us what the course involves, Doctor?
The course at the present time involves refresher courses in oral and written communications, mathematics, and science. In addition to that, we give introductory courses in drafting and map reading, surveying, geology, mineral and rock identification, prospecting, mining, and milling methods. And we have added in the last 2 years courses in petroleum in view of the fact that approximately 50% of the students in the last two courses have been employed by the petroleum industry.
Mm-hmm. How do the students respond to the courses themselves?
I think they respond very well, however, except for the first month or two in which an orientation period is needed because they have come from a totally different environment into a university atmosphere.
What do you think the service to the state is as far as the course is concerned here?
I think we have a service to the state and also to the individuals. The employment opportunities of these people are enhanced by the knowledge that they gain here. And also, it allows these people to become involved in the development of the state's mineral and petroleum industries. Not only is there a financial aspect to this, but I think there's also another aspect. It gives these individuals a sense of accomplishment, and as well as that, a feeling of having become a part of the development of the state.
Where are the graduates currently employed, Doctor?
We have them employed in several places. The first 15 went to the Kennecott Copper Corporation, and it's my understanding that the majority of these students are still there. We have approximately 13 of them employed with the oil companies. We have had some employed with the U.S. Smelting Company and Vitro Minerals. We've had one or two with the Highway Department. We have about three employed at Murphy Dome. And in the last year, we've had six of them employed with Parco Drilling, who have a contract with Atomic Energy Commission on Amchitka.
A very worthwhile program. Thank you, Dr. Cook. Our guest has been Dr. Donald Cook, head of the Department of Mineral Engineering at the University of Alaska. I'm Steve Sherman.
This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It's been brought to you by this station as a public service. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. To many educators, a university's library stands as the most important single entity on campus. And to many, the number of volumes in the library stands as the most important single criterion of the library's value. In April, your University of Alaska Library on the main campus at College acquired more than 3,000 volumes, the largest month's acquisition in the library's history. The library has outgrown its present facility. Even now, reading space is being converted to stack space as administrators attempt to keep pace with the growth in volumes. The future will resolve these problems of growth because across the plaza from the present library, another is being constructed. Our guest today is Ted Ryberg, Director of Libraries from the University of Alaska. The future of our library is our story today on This Is Your University. Mr. Ryberg, the number of books is often listed as the most familiar description of the holdings of a library. Do you think this is an adequate description?
No, I think probably it's the most convenient sort of figures to use. But if I may refer back to the figure you gave previously of 3,000 volumes being added to the university library in April, actually the figure was closer to 3,500. But like most statistics, they have a tendency to conceal more than they show. And we added to the university many other types of materials in addition to monographic or book material.
For instance, what are the types of material?
Well, for example, we added several hundred rolls of microfilm, and we added several thousand items of microforms other than microfilm. We added sound recordings and things of that type, non-book nature.
Exactly how many books per se do we have in the library now?
Well, I should say that we have roughly 200,000 volumes at the present time, and we are adding them at the rate of, something more than 30,000 volumes a year. It's a little difficult to put an exact figure on.
Yes, and how many volumes will the new library hold?
Well, the new library, we hope, will have a capacity of between 400,000 and 500,000 volumes, but we do expect to move in with a book collection, a very healthy book collection of selected volumes, I might add, of about 250,000.
When exactly will you be moving into the new building?
Well, we're hoping at the present time that the schedule will be adhered to and we will be able to move in to the new building in September of 1969, just slightly more than a year away.
Thank you, Mr. Ryberg, for being with us today. Our guest has been Ted Ryberg, Director of Libraries for the University of Alaska. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It has been brought to you by this station as a public service. Your announcer has been Steve Sherman. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. Along with the springtime migration of birds to Alaska, will come a flock of members of the American Ornithologists Union to attend their 86th annual meeting at the University of Alaska. It will be the largest meeting ever held at the U of A by a national organization. Today, Dr. Bryna Kessel, Dean of the U of A College of Biological Sciences and Renewable Resources, who is also chairman of the Local Arrangements Committee for the meeting, is our guest on This Is Your University. Dr. Kessel, would you tell our listeners just what is the American Ornithologists Union?
The American Ornithologists Union, popularly called the AOU for short, is the leading professional ornithological organization in North America, geographically covering the United States, Canada, and Mexico. It's composed of both professional and amateur people interested in birds, having a total membership of about 3,000.
Well, how many do you expect to attend the meeting?
We're expecting about 300 to come to the University of Alaska for this meeting. It's going to be a pretty high-powered group, including scientists from most of the major museums and universities throughout the country. Such people as Dr. Alexander Wetmore, who you may know as the retired director of the Smithsonian Institution and one of the very earliest scientists to work in Katmai National Monument. Dr. Austin Rand with the Field Museum of Natural History will also be here. He did a lot of work in the 1940s on the birds and the mammals of the Canal Road in the Yukon. Also, Roger Torrey Peterson, who is perhaps best known for his work on bird guides and so on in the whole of North America.
Well, I suppose because these people are ornithologists, they'll all be flying to Alaska.
Oh, by no means. Of course, many, because of a shortage of time, will be forced to fly, but I have been surprised to learn of the number that will be driving up the Alaska Highway. A number also are planning to travel at least one way by boat through southeastern Alaska, and then perhaps using the narrow gauge railway to Whitehorse or bus out of Haines on into Fairbanks. For many, this will be their first trip to Alaska, and they plan to stay an additional several weeks to visit as much of Alaska as possible.
Well, just what kind of program do you have planned for your members?
The main scientific meetings will be held on the University of Alaska campus from the 18th to the 21st of June. In addition to the scientific papers, we have a number of special functions planned, especially for the spouses not attending the sessions, including a tea for the ladies sponsored by the Federated Garden Clubs of the region. Highlights of the meeting are some of the major pre- and post-session field trips for bird watching. A pre-session field trip will originate on the 15th of June in Anchorage and will go to Cold Bay, Umnak Island, and the Pribilofs, returning to Fairbanks on the 17th, just before the meeting. Three post-session trips are planned. The longest is a three-day trip to Nome and vicinity in St. Lawrence Island. Another will go to Mount McKinley National Park. And a third will go to the Alpine Tundra at Eagle Summit on the Steese Highway.
The 86th annual meeting of the American Ornithologists Union should prove to be an outstanding event for all of Alaska. Our thanks to Dr. Bryna Kessel for being our guest today on This Is Your University. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the Department of News Service of the University of Alaska in cooperation with the radio station KUAC-FM. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. From March 12th through April 2nd of this year, 110 educators from over 40 states were selected to participate in a traveling seminar entitled Contrasts in European Secondary and Higher Education. The participants traveled to London, Moscow, Prague, East Berlin, and Copenhagen. Today, our guest is Dr. Arthur S. Buswell, Dean of the Division of Statewide Services, who represented the University of Alaska at this seminar on This Is Your University. Dr. Buswell, could you tell our listeners just what was the purpose of this traveling seminar that you recently attended?
Yes, Paul. One purpose, of course, was to learn what was going on in education in these five foreign countries, three of them behind the Iron Curtain and two of them on this side. The other purpose would be to take a look at what they're doing in terms of looking at ourselves by discussing with them what they're doing and trying to explain the things that we're doing. We are better able to analyze our own situation and perhaps come back with some new ideas and some new thoughts, whether there are ideas injected by what they're doing or rather just taking a look from another viewpoint of what we're doing.
Well, did you bring back any of these new ideas?
One of the ideas that we have talked about for a long time but done very little about at our university and in many American universities is the idea of more self-study. And this is one that Europe is much advanced in comparison. On the other hand, we were also proud to realize that they are beginning to Americanize their education from the standpoint of offering a more comprehensive education. They're very narrow at the present time, and they start to specialize at a very early age. In England, they were proud to tell us that they were Americanizing their educational system. In the communist countries, it will take longer. Their aims of education are the aims of the state, and they feel the need for specific training to get people into the productive industries, and that later on they would hope to be able to inject literature, art, sociology, these other things.
Well, you traveled through, as you mentioned, several of these communist countries. Could you give us some of your impressions?
Yes, it's dangerous, but in general, Moscow was somewhat drab in dress, color, and of course we were there when it snowed too. But there was quite a contrast between that and Czechoslovakia, in which the people there were much more exciting to talk to. There was color in the buses, in the houses, in their clothes. Of course, we were there at an exciting time. The bloodless revolution that's been going on there for more personal freedom made it an exciting time, and especially the place of educational and educators in this. In East Berlin, the feeling was one of fear, that the people live in fear, and actually it sort of got to us, and we were glad to get away. I might say also that our meetings there were all canceled, primarily because we had been in Czechoslovakia talking with the people in education, and the powers in East Berlin did not want us to pass these words on to the people at Humboldt University or the educators in East Germany.
Well, then you would say that you're pleased with the place of the University of Alaska on the international scene?
I think we stack up quite well, but we've got to do the things we're doing a lot better, and we've got to be more innovative in terms of self-study and motivating the student to do more on his own rather than lecturing to him and getting a return.
The Division of Statewide Services takes a look at the international scene. Our thanks to Dr. Arthur S. Buswell, Dean of the Division of Statewide Services, for being our guest today on This Is Your University. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University of Alaska's Department of News Service in cooperation with the university radio station KUAC-FM. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. At the 46th commencement exercises of the University of Alaska, honorary doctorate degrees were conferred on two distinguished sons of Alaska. One, a humanitarian, was born in a small village on the island of Kalisnu in southeastern Alaska. The other, a statesman, was born in Skagway. Each has distinguished himself to service to others. Together, they become our story today on This Is Your University. An honorary degree is the highest tribute the University of Alaska can offer a man. It attests to his distinction among peers, to his singular accomplishments. Therefore, it is of particular interest that two of this year's recipients were born in Alaska. The Reverend Dr. Walter A. Sobolev received an honorary Doctor of Humanities degree at the university's recent commencement exercises. Born of Tlingit Russian-German parentage on the island of Kalisnu in 1908, Dr. Sobolev has dedicated his life to humanitarian causes. He was graduated from Sheldon Jackson High School in Sitka and continued his education at Dubuque University in Iowa, earning Bachelor of Arts and Bachelor of Divinity degrees. Later, he was awarded an Honorary Doctor of Divinity degree from the same institution. In the intervening years, Dr. Sobolev has become known, respected, and loved throughout Alaska. As an evangelist for the Alaska Presbytery, he has traveled extensively, ministering to the social and cultural needs of Native villages. His personal goal is to assist and encourage the Alaska Native to assume his rightful place among the races of the world. Toward this goal, Dr. Sobolev has worked unceasingly with the Tlingit Indians, hastening a cultural transition from superstition to Christianity. He pioneered church broadcasting in Alaska, initiating a program in the Tlingit dialect. Today, Dr. Sobolev is Grand President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. He serves on the Governor's Land Claims Task Force Committee and has recently appointed to the State Board of Education. The other man saluted by the university is Dr. M. Wilford Godding, who received an honorary Doctor of Laws degree. He was born in Skagway in 1911, where his parents had settled a decade earlier. Dr. Godding was graduated from high school in Skagway, earning his Bachelor of Arts degree at Yankton College in South Dakota and Bachelor of Laws degree at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. From 1914 to 1960, Dr. Godding gained distinction for service in many positions with the Office of the Secretary of Interior. He was instrumental in post-war development of Alaska and helped shape administration policy in support of statehood. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy appointed Dr. Godding to the post of U.S. High Commissioner for the Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands, an area known as Micronesia and encompassing 3 million square miles. At the time he assumed the post, Micronesia had been under American stewardship for 16 years. Yet little had been accomplished to bring social and governmental stability to the peoples of its 2,000 islands. Dr. Godding began his 5-year administration facing disorder. When Dr. Godding retired from the post in 1966 to his home in Alexandria, Virginia, Micronesia had gained the stability it needed and was a showplace of sound territorial administration. These remarkable men, Dr. Sobolev and Dr. Godding, have given the highest order of service to their fellow man. In conferring honorary doctorate degrees upon them, the University of Alaska salutes each for his distinguished accomplishments. This is Your University is a weekly recorded program produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. It has been brought to you by this station as a public service. Your announcer has been Steve Sherman. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.